Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 226, Any Portobello in a Storm. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having some fun, growing our skills and our confidence as home cooks. I'm so glad you took a little bit of time today to join me. I've got a great episode lined up for you. Before we get to that though, you know, we always have to take care of a little bit of housekeeping over here at Kitchen Counter Central. First and foremost, you'll be interested to know that the show notes for this episode of the podcast will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/226. So if you hear something in this episode that piques your interest, you want to find a link or a little bit more information on that, I'll put those in the show notes again at kitchencounterpodcast.com/226. Also in the show notes will be links to my social media and, of course, the Nitty Grits Podcasts, which is a network of shows out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down in New Orleans, Louisiana. Kitchen Counter Podcast, along with other shows, getting together, sharing some food, drink, culture goodness across a wide variety of topics. I think in my last episode, I mentioned a new podcast called Must or Mash. I've been listening to that. They've only got a few episodes out so far. But it's a lot of fun. It's a husband and wife team. They're chefs. At least when they recorded these episodes, I think they were based down in New Orleans. But they take a different food every episode. Like the first one, I think, was a crawfish boil, so very regionally appropriate. And then they debate what would go better with it, wine or beer. And they usually pick a certain type of wine or a certain type of beer. And they have a really fun conversation. And you learn a little bit about wine, beer, and the food that they're talking about. So definitely go check out Must or Mash. You can find that along with the other shows on the Nitty Grits Network down at southernfood.org. If you want to send a note to me directly, you can do so by email. Just send one over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I'll take a look at what you have to say. If you have any questions or requests for topics, whatever it is, just send me a note and I'll see what I can do. This episode actually was spurred on by an email I received from a listener. And in fact, if you haven't figured it out already from the title, very punny title, if I do say so myself, Any Portobello in a Storm, we're going to be talking about mushrooms today. And can I tell you what? I was trying to be clever with the title, and I was really having a hard time with an appropriate pun because I could come up with a lot for shiitake mushrooms, but, you know, family show, couldn't really go most of those places. So Any Portobello in a Storm is where we're at. Anyway, let me just read a portion of this email that I got from a listener named Miguel. I don't know where Miguel was from. He didn't put it in his email, but Miguel, thank you for sending me this email. I've already replied to you in the email, but I thought I would read this because this did inspire this particular episode. Let me just paraphrase most of this. So Miguel wrote, "Hi, Roger. Thanks for the podcast. I have been enjoying it as I try to listen to all the past episodes. I have a question for you. What do you have against mushrooms?" Now, let me pause for a second. I didn't think I had anything against mushrooms, but Miguel thinks I do. He goes on, "In all the episodes I've listened to, I think you have almost never talked about mushrooms. I'm a big mushroom fan, so if you have an episode, let me know, or maybe you can talk about mushrooms in the future." He had some other stuff in the email, but this is the germane part for this episode, because as I read this from Miguel, I thought, do I have something against mushrooms? Because I think you're right. I don't know that I talk about mushrooms all that much. I know I've talked about them before on the show, but certainly not as the focal point of an episode, not as the star of an episode, but probably as just part of a recipe, something like that. So, Miguel, I'm a fun guy. Ugh, stuff just writes itself. Okay, no more puns, I promise. Today is your day. I'm going to do an episode on mushrooms. And it's funny, I was thinking about why maybe I don't talk about mushrooms all that much. And truth be told, I do cook with mushrooms, but not frequently. They're not something that come into my normal rotation of ingredients. I don't dislike mushrooms. I like mushrooms. I just don't use them a lot. And I wonder if that's because when I was growing up, we never really ate mushrooms. In fact, I was kind of a picky kid. You know, I didn't like some of the vegetables and weird stuff my mom would put on the plate in front of us, like any kid, I suppose. But I don't think I ever saw or witnessed my mom use mushrooms or make anything with mushrooms in it. I don't think I've ever even, as a kid, was offered the opportunity to refuse a mushroom. So as a kid, I don't think I ever ate them. Maybe she used like cream of mushroom soup or something once in a while, but that doesn't really count, right? That could be anything. So I think part of it for me is I just never had mushrooms a lot when I was younger, and then that dish didn't really carry over into my adult cooking life. But again, I do use mushrooms. I do like mushrooms. So today I am going to talk about mushrooms, and there's a lot to it. So what I am going to focus on in this episode is I'm going to narrow it down quite a bit, and I'm going to talk about the handful of really common mushrooms, at least here in the United States, that you as a home cook are likely to run into at the grocery store. In fact, I won't even talk about all of those because nowadays grocery stores have a wide variety of mushrooms, and the fancy supermarkets and grocery stores are really going crazy with mushrooms and things like that. So we're gonna narrow it down a little bit. And then I'm gonna share, I picked out like maybe three of my favorite uses for mushrooms. Three out of thousands and thousands of possible uses for mushrooms, right? But I'm going to share three that I typically go to if I'm using mushrooms that I think you might find useful if you are not a big mushroom person and maybe you want to incorporate them more into your cooking. Now that I think about it, I bet the first time I ever ate a mushroom of any sort or came across a mushroom was on pizza, I bet. And as a kid, I was not a huge fan of that. I'm fine with it now. I don't seek it out, but occasionally I'll crave mushrooms on a pizza. But I bet that's the first time I ever had it. Anyway, I digress. So let's get into it. Let's talk about mushrooms. Now, mushrooms are neither animal nor vegetable. They actually have their own kingdom, fungi. So they're not animal, they're not vegetable, but for the purpose of home cooking and talking about them, I think generally they're lumped in with the rest of the veggies. And it just makes sense because like their veggie counterparts, they're low in calories, they're low in fat, they're relatively low in protein, but they do have a lot of other good vitamins, nutrients, minerals, things like that going for them. So typically when we think of mushrooms, we think of them in the vegetable category when it comes to home cooking. Now, home cooks have access to tons and tons and tons of vegetables. So why do we need to scoot some over to make room for our friends, the mushrooms? There's a couple of reasons, and I just want to talk about what mushrooms can do for your cooking if you're somebody who's not really familiar with mushrooms and what they taste like and whatnot. First and foremost, they're one of the really, really great representatives in the natural world of what we call umami flavor. Now, think back to when we talked about many, many episodes ago, or maybe you already know this, the general five tastes that human beings perceive when they eat food. You've got your salty, you've got sweet, then there's sour, and then bitter. So those are the four big ones. But there's a fifth one that we call umami. And umami is a little bit harder to define. I mean, the other ones kind of speak for themselves. We all know what salty, we all know what sweet tastes like. What exactly does umami taste like? The best way I could describe it, it's a very savory, rich, meaty flavor, for lack of a better word. Other foods besides mushrooms that really give you a great umami kick, besides the granddaddy of them all, it's not really a food, but MSG, monosodium glutamate, and it's the glutamates in foods that give that umami flavor. But MSG is the number one source for umami flavor anywhere. But other foods where you find umami in abundance would be things, of course, mushrooms, but then things like a nice aged Parmesan cheese or anchovies that have been preserved in oil. Those generally have a lot of umami flavor. Meat, of course, typically has umami flavor as well. So it's that sort of a profile that mushrooms can give you without being a meat product or without being a cheese or dairy product, but they do pack a ton of umami flavor. And the darker colored the mushroom typically, or the more you cook a mushroom in general, the more that umami flavor concentrates and intensifies. So if you're looking to bring that savory, rich, meaty flavor to your food, mushrooms are a great way to do that. Now, the second reason I think mushrooms are so popular, especially with folks who don't eat meat, is a tie-on to that very first reason. Because of their umami, the presence of umami in mushrooms, they make really, really good meat substitutes in a lot of vegetarian dishes. So you don't have to be substituting out meat to use mushrooms, of course, but if you're looking to reduce the amount of meat you're eating, mushrooms can be a very good way to add the same sorts of textures and flavors that you might get with meat without using meat at all. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. The other great thing about mushrooms is they're widely, widely available. Any decent store that's even got a part of a produce section in North America should have some sort of mushroom availability. And part of the reason is that is they're easily grown in a wide variety of environments and controlled settings, and they're grown all year round. So there's not really a season for mushrooms, at least not domesticated mushrooms that you're finding in grocery stores. So you can get them virtually wherever and whenever you want. So they're always available, and that just makes them a really, really great ingredient to understand how to use as a home cook. So if you're going to the store or maybe the farmer's market or wherever to find your mushrooms, you're already half the battle is won. They're going to have good, safe, fresh mushrooms there. I don't want to get into this really deeply, but I should mention that if you go out into the wilds and you find mushrooms, you should not assume that those are automatically safe to eat. There are a lot of mushrooms out in the wild that are poisonous to humans or have some level of toxicity if you consume them. So you should always get your mushrooms from proper sources like grocery stores, mushroom growers, or farmers markets, things like that. If you do go out to look for wild mushrooms, you should always do so under the supervision of a mycologist or some other expert in foraging mushrooms, because you wouldn't want to make a mistake and get the wrong kind of mushroom. But that's not a concern for our conversation today, because we're just rolling down to the grocery store and seeing what they have in the produce bin for the mushrooms, and it makes it really easy to get a hold of good mushrooms. Now, mushrooms come in different varieties, and they're all a little bit different in their characteristics, and like I said, I'm going to talk about a few in a minute, but I want to lay out also just some general concepts for when you're looking for mushrooms in the store, for example. Kind of like when you go to pick out a watermelon, how do you know you're getting a good watermelon? Let's talk about how you know you're going to get good mushrooms. So in general, no matter what kind of mushroom you're picking out, there's a couple of things you always want to look for. You want to look for, first of all, I like loose mushrooms if you can. Sometimes you'll go to a store and you can find prepackaged, you know, like in a little cellophane wrapper or in a bin with the plastic on top, or like pre-sliced mushrooms. Yeah, that might save you a few minutes of work, but you can't really inspect your mushrooms when you do that, and you have to kind of take whatever's in the package. So I like to find loose mushrooms first and foremost, because you can really take a look at them. Look for mushrooms that have obvious signs of damage, you know, torn mushroom caps or dried out, withered, bruised. These are all, you know, miscolored. These are all signs that you probably don't want to pick up that particular mushroom. So look for mushrooms that appear plump and firm, no big amounts of damage, you know, no obvious damage. You want the gills, which if you flip your mushroom over, and you don't see gills on a lot of mushrooms, but on like shiitake or portobello, you'll see the gills. That's the fan-like structure that's underneath the cap. You want those to look kind of plump. You don't want those to look all dried out and shriveled. So that's generally what you're looking for a good quality mushroom. So something that's plump, looks fresh, no obvious signs of damage, really, really similar to what you're looking for in, you know, most other fruits, for example, that you're buying in the produce department. when you get your mushrooms home. Hopefully you're using them within a day or two, if not the same day that you purchase them. But if you do have to store them, it's usually best not to do anything to the mushrooms. Don't clean them or anything until you're ready to use them, and put them in a brown paper sack and just fold it up and leave it on your countertop. That will allow the mushrooms to breathe. They won't get moist and start to mold or anything like that too quickly. You know, about a week on the countertop in a paper bag is your lifespan there. Should be plenty of time for you to get to them and use them. When you are ready to use your mushrooms, you should clean them. And that, what I'd like to do typically is just take a damp kitchen paper towel and wipe off the tops and the stems and the bottoms of my mushrooms just to loosen and remove any dirt or debris that might still be present on the mushrooms. A lot of mushrooms you'll find in the store loose will have little bits of dirt and things like that on them. Just go ahead and wipe that off gently with a paper towel. You could also rinse under running water. That's perfectly fine too. Just give them a quick rinse and then a dry off with a paper towel. I would avoid soaking your mushrooms. Depending on the type of mushroom especially, they will take in the water, and if you leave your mushrooms in water for too long, they can become a little bit spongy or possibly even mushy, and that's really not what you're going for in a fresh mushroom. So a quick rinse or a wipe down with a paper towel is really all you need to do. As I talk about a couple specific mushroom varieties, I might get into a couple of extra things I do, but until we get to that, the general rule of thumb, again, wipe off or a quick rinse off and dry for your mushrooms, and you're ready to use them. All right, let me talk a little bit about some of the specific mushrooms you're going to find down at your grocery store. Now, what's funny about this is I decided, just based on experience and memory, what mushrooms I was going to talk about, and then I happened to be at the store before I recorded this for a completely unrelated reason, but I was walking through the produce department, and I saw the mushroom bin, and I just had to stop and look, and I felt very validated because, yes, the mushrooms I'm talking about today were basically the mushrooms they had in huge supply. They had these four fresh mushrooms. They had and dried mushrooms as well. So I thought, okay, I am on the right track. I even took some pictures of them that I'll share in the show notes. So as I go through these individual mushrooms, if you're curious about what they look like, you can go and check it out there. So four varieties of fresh mushrooms I want to talk about. I'm going to talk about dried mushrooms in general at the end. And as I go through these, I'll talk about their characteristics, and I will mention maybe at least one thing I'd like to do with each of these mushrooms, just to give you an idea to spur you on. In the show notes, I will, of course, add recipes and other things that have to do with mushrooms. So like I said, there's thousands of things you can do with mushrooms. This is just a very, very, very small sampling from my experience. All right, let's talk about some specific mushrooms then that you're going to find in your North American grocery store. Now, the first three I'm talking about, and I'll just name them off here, white button mushrooms, cremini mushrooms, and portobello mushrooms, those are all actually the same mushroom, the same species, not even different varieties. They're the same mushroom at different ages and stages of maturity. But as these mushrooms mature, their characteristics change quite drastically, actually, and they have different flavor profiles and, I think, different ideal uses as you go along. So the mushroom I want to talk about first is part one of three of this type of mushroom. For those of you who like to nerd out on the scientific names that I will probably butcher, this is the Agaricus bisporus mushroom. So white button mushrooms are the little round, white, puffy balls that you find in the mushroom section. They have short little stubby stems. They are the most commonly sold and consumed mushroom in the United States. Everything I read, everything I look at, including from the Mushroom Council, says these account for about 90% of all mushrooms consumed in the United States. So these are your go-to mushrooms. They're probably the go-to mushroom because they're the most accessible. They're everywhere. They're easy to grow. They're in the early stage of maturity, so you don't have to grow them that long to harvest them. Their flavor is generally mild, although it does get a little more concentrated as you cook them. They have a high water concentration. So these are the mushrooms that you roll down to your neighborhood pizza parlor and you order a mushroom pizza. These are the mushrooms that are being sliced up and put on your pizza. That is the most common, probably, use of these mushrooms. I would be willing to bet that they're eaten on pizza. Of that 90%, I bet that's 50% of it right there. But let's talk about the parts of a mushroom too, because those change a little bit as the mushroom matures. I've already talked about kind of the white ball of the white button mushroom. The white button mushroom, you see two essential parts of a mushroom. One is the stem, and then one is the cap, which is that white round part that's on top of the stem. Because they're immature mushrooms, they haven't opened up yet, so you don't see the other parts like the gills on the other underside of the cap or anything like that. The entirety of a white button mushroom can be eaten. You can eat them raw. You can saute them and cook them down and concentrate their flavor. As you cook them, the moisture goes out of them, the flavor concentrates. And you can use these for practically any use that you want. Pizza would be my number one choice for these, but you could saute these up, throw them in an omelet, slice them up, toss them into a salad, things like that. Very accessible, very easy to use, these white button mushrooms. Now let's go with this mushroom variety and let's go down the line a little bit as they've matured a little bit. They've actually gotten darker in color. They've taken on a more tan, light brownish color. Maybe they've gotten a little bit larger. A white button mushroom's maybe 1 to 3 inches if they're really big. A cremini mushroom's probably about that size too, maybe just a touch larger typically. But again, it's the same mushroom. It's just been maturing for a little bit longer before it was harvested. Now, as it matures, and as the color darkens on these, the moisture, the water content goes down, and the flavor concentration goes up. So while a white button mushroom is fairly mild, a cremini mushroom will be a little more concentrated in flavor, a little bit more umami, a little bit less water in there to dull the flavor. You can do with a cremini mushroom pretty much everything you can do with the white button mushroom. Generally, I like to use them more because they do have a little bit more flavor and they're a little bit, just a tiny, tiny little bit extra over the white button mushroom. So anything you can do with a white button mushroom, you can do with a cremini mushroom. Pizza topping, sauteed, thrown in an omelet, put on a salad, the whole mushroom is edible. And just like the white button mushroom, it's a stem and it's a cap. They're usually not opened up yet, so you see anything under that mushroom cap. If they're allowed to mature a little bit longer, they become what some people call a baby bella or a baby portobello, and then they're somewhere between a cremini and a portobello mushroom. They're a little bit bigger. They're very easy to work with, very easy to store when you need that little umami meaty flavor and you want to incorporate it into your breakfast. Wash these up, slice them up, toss them in a pan with a little bit of olive oil or butter, saute them, a dash of salt until they start to get dark and caramelize a little bit, right into the omelet they go. That's my favorite way to do it. All right, let's keep going. Let's get to the portobello. The portobello, again, same mushroom. It's just been allowed to mature a lot longer. Like the cremini mushroom, it is darker in color. It's turning quite dark brown, but probably the most striking characteristic of a portobello is its size. A mature portobello mushroom can get quite large, up to 6 inches in diameter. They look like a big hamburger bun or a big hamburger patty. They're big. They're really big. And because of their size, I think they have some really, really unique applications for a home cook. Now, as I mentioned with the first two, because it's been allowed to mature, there's less water content in the mushroom. The color is darker. The flavor is even more intensified. So that all applies. But you can do things with a portobello that you can't do, obviously, with a button or a cremini. And I've already mentioned it. For example, you can grill up a portobello mushroom like a hamburger patty. Throw it between a couple of buns, and you've got one of the classic standby veggie burgers, a grilled portobello. You can even flip the script. Let's say you're cool with the burger, you know, get that beef and fry it up or throw it on the grill, but you don't want the buns. You could even use portobello mushrooms as a top and bottom bun to your burger. They're big enough that you could stuff them, bake them for a main course. So their size, I think, is something you can really take advantage of as a home cook. Now, the portobello, because of their size, we do see some interesting different things that we haven't seen yet, probably on our button mushrooms or our cremini mushrooms. And that is, if you turn it upside down and you look under the cap, you're going to see the beautiful gills of the portobello mushroom. That's that fan-like structure that radiates out from the center where the stem connects to the cap. When I clean a portobello mushroom, I typically remove the stem just by holding the mushroom in one hand and popping the stem out with my other hand. They're edible, but they're sometimes tough and fibrous and woody. You could save those for stock, but typically if I'm grilling a portobello or something, I don't want the stem on there because it won't grill up nice and flat, so I pop that off. Now, the gills are also edible. You can leave them in there. I personally like to remove them. For the same reason, I, you know, run a wet kitchen towel over the top of the mushroom to remove dirt and debris. That's one of the reasons I like to remove the gills, because sometimes dirt and debris can get caught up in those things as well. So I just like to take a teaspoon and gently scrape out the gills under the portobello mushroom cap after I've removed the stem. By the way, one of the other reasons I typically would remove the gills in a portobello is less for flavor reasons and just more for appearance reasons. If you're going to use it in a soup or a broth or a stock or something like that, those gills can impart sort of a brown mucky color to, and not like a pleasant brown mucky color, not like a nice brown broth, but kind of a dirty, cloudy sort of a thing. So again, it's edible, but if you don't want that, you could remove the gills, how I've sort of explained. And I'll put a video in the show notes about cleaning mushrooms as well. But my favorite use for a portobello, I've already said, is to grill it. Portobello is also a mushroom that takes really well to marinating. A quick 30-minute marinade, right on the grill, high heat, maybe 5 to 7 minutes per side, and you've got a really great, meaty, steaky, burgery portobello mushroom that you can use in a variety of ways. So as grilling season comes upon us, I think that's a fantastic mushroom to get acquainted with. And I've kind of gone on and on about their size, but you don't have to leave them whole. You could slice them up, you could chop them up and use them for, again, any of the other uses I've already mentioned for their smaller versions of mushrooms. Now, let's say you've graduated beyond boring old button and cremini and you don't have a use for a big old portobello mushroom, but you want to make something really rich, umami-heavy, earthy, woodsy-flavored, then you might want to look at shiitake mushrooms. Shiitakes are big in Asian cuisine, particularly in China and Japan. They look like you would imagine a mushroom should look in the wild. They have a nice, long, slender stem. They have a nice open cap, some light-colored gills underneath that cap, but they're fairly small. They're typically only a couple of inches in diameter, maybe the size of a button mushroom or smaller, but they just have more of that classic mushroom look. They're not a round ball. They have that opened up mushroom top with the stem and the gills underneath. Now, shiitakes, I also remove the stem or as much of the stem as close to the cap as I can for the same reason as the portobello. They can be a little tough sometimes. They're great in stock, but I like to remove those. And then my favorite use of a shiitake would be to slice them up, saute them in some butter until they get nice, dark. Most of the moisture is out of those. They really start to caramelize and get really concentrated in flavor. And personally, I think there's nothing better than a wonderful pasta dish. And actually, I'm thinking Italian because I'm thinking a creamy, cheesy pasta dish. And you just want to kick up the umami another notch. Put those sauteed shiitake mushrooms into your sauce. Toss that with your pasta. It adds a satisfying, meaty chew when you get to one of those mushrooms. The umami of the mushroom plays so nicely with the creaminess of the pasta and the sauce. Of course, there's a million Asian recipes in Asian cuisine that you can use shiitakes for as well, and I'll put some links to those in the show notes. But if it were I and I were making something tonight with shiitakes, I would probably make maybe even just a simple almost like a simple Alfredo with just Parmesan cheese, maybe some garlic, shiitake mushrooms. Heck, maybe I'd even go crazy and throw some sun-dried tomatoes in there too. That would be an extremely rich, satisfying meal. So as far as fresh mushrooms go, again, that button, cremini, portobello, all the same thing, just different ages, and the shiitake are going to be the ones you're going to be running across the most in your grocery store. There's a whole host of other mushrooms, porcini, morel, oyster mushrooms, hen of the woods, but these are the ones that do the yeoman's work for mushrooms in the kitchen, especially in the home cook's kitchen. These are the ones which would be your go-to mushrooms. Of all mushrooms, they're the most affordable, they're the most accessible, they're the most widely usable, in my opinion. Now, there's one more category I haven't talked about yet, and that's dried mushrooms. And I'm not really picky about what kind of mushroom my dried mushroom is. Sometimes I'll go crazy and buy a little bag of dried forest mushrooms or whatever. But I'll tell you what, my number one thing to do with dried mushrooms is to soak them in hot water and make a nice, strong, flavored mushroom broth, and then make a risotto with that mushroom broth. And then what I'll do with the reconstituted mushrooms, because as you soak them in the hot water, they plump up. I chop those up and then also throw them in the risotto, and you have a beautiful wild mushroom risotto. And it's so easy to make, and that mushroom broth, oh, good grief, it is dynamite. In fact, the first time I ever used something like that, I was camping with some friends. My wife and I took our friends camping. They're vegetarian. And I thought, I'm going to do something really special for dinner at the campsite. And I thought I was going to make a risotto. And I thought, what am I going to do? Maybe I'll get some wild mushrooms, dried wild mushrooms at the store. I'll soak them up. I'll use that instead of, you know, chicken broth for the risotto. And I don't really like veggie broth, although I may have combined it with the mushrooms. I think vegetable broth most of the time is pretty bland. And anyway, I used that mushroom stock that I made, just a few cups worth, you know, in half an hour, as the water base, as the liquid base for that risotto. And it was dynamite. And I know that when you camp, everything tastes better. Even the most mundane things taste amazing when you're camping. So I made it again a week later after we got back. I made it at home just to make sure I wasn't imagining how good it was. And it was as good as I remembered. So you can make huge batches of stock from dried mushrooms. You just need more dried mushrooms. But again, my favorite thing to do is just take a few ounces of them. Typically what you would buy in a little bag at the store, reconstitute those in a few cups of really hot water, let it sit for 30 minutes or however long the package tells you. It's usually about 30 minutes, I think. Strain that mushroom stock, because there could be some grits or little bits of twigs or whatever in those dried mushrooms. You want to get those out, and then boom, you've got an amazing mushroom stock that you can substitute for anything that calls for liquids, stocks, whatever, soups, stews, risotto, you know, you name it, you can use that. You can even just sip on warm mushroom broth. It's pretty dang tasty. Lots of umami in there. So I would even go so far as to say you probably should just have a little bag of dried mushrooms in your pantry. That's like a pantry staple. Whenever you need an incredibly flavorful broth, that's a go-to. You know, you can throw a little garlic or a couple of other herbs or whatever in there with it, but that those dried mushrooms pack a boatload of flavor. So don't overlook the dried mushrooms. You can make stock with fresh mushrooms. It's just a different beast. It takes a lot more. It's not quite as concentrated in flavor. And I like the dried ones because I can just make a few cups at a time, and then I don't have a bunch of mushroom stock taking up space in my fridge. All right, I think that's probably going to do it for my mushroom talk for today. I see I've been going on for quite a while about it, but I wanted to rectify the impression that apparently some people have that I don't like mushrooms, or I have something against them. I don't. And I hope if you aren't a mushroom person, or you haven't eaten a lot of mushrooms or cooked with them, at least this has given you a little bit of inspiration to say, like, maybe they're not that weird and scary after all, and I should roll down to the store, pick up a few cremini mushrooms, they're a great starter mushroom, slice a few up, toss them in a skillet with some butter, cook them down, and then, you know, throw them into your next omelet or whatever. All right, I hope you got some good information out of that mushroom chat. Again, the show notes will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/226. Again, kitchencounterpodcast.com/226 for the show notes for our Any Portobello in the Storm episode. Head over there. Don't forget to send me an email if you have any questions over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Miguel, thank you so much for sending me the email that prompted this whole episode. I appreciate it. I hope I did your mushrooms some sort of justice. You know what you can find down at southernfood.org. Find the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And at that website, you can find information about the Nitty Grits Podcast Network, of which The Kitchen Counter is a member. Go check those folks out. Adding new shows all the time. Got a couple new ones in the wings that'll be coming on in probably the next few weeks. And as always, I appreciate you taking a little bit of time to spend with me to think about kitchen and home cooking and that kind of stuff. If you think you have friends or family that might get some value out of the show, please share it with them. Show them how to find the podcast and other podcasts, because there's a lot of good podcasts out there. If they're not a podcast listener, darn it, they should be. Show them how. And yeah, and share it. We always love to get new ears in our little home cooking community. All right, get in the kitchen, cook up some good food, have some fun, fail some dishes and learn from it. And until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.